The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now, Mitch Albom, journalist and author of Tuesdays with Maury, joins me. And Mitch, the stage version of Tuesdays with Maury is running at the Gaiety next month. I have to say, though, I'm feeling old because I did read the book when it first came out. That's 30 years ago now, isn't it?
Yes, I'm feeling just as old as you are. So we're in good company.
It changed your life, though, didn't it, that book?
Totally, yeah. I look at that as the bifurcation of my life. I had one existence until I was 37 and a totally different existence from that day on.
Mm-hmm. And did you have any inclination when that book was going to print just how successful it was going to be?
No, I was too stunned that it was actually going to print because we got turned down by pretty much every publisher that I approached. Many people don't know this, but I only wrote Tuesdays with Maury to pay Maury's medical bills. I was a sports writer at the time, and I had no experience in writing a book like that or anything even remotely like that. But Maury had told me that he was dying from Lou Gehrig's disease, or what you call motor neuron disease, I believe, ALS. He had been dying for several years from this and had accumulated these enormous expenses because insurance won't cover things that are done at home. And so he feared that he was going to have to, he said, I'm going to die two deaths, one when I actually die and one in the grave when I realize my family's going to have to sell their house to pay off the bills that I accumulated. And that was the whole motivation for writing Tuesdays with Maury. Otherwise, we were just kind of going through it together. And I went into New York to try to find publishers who would be interested. And I told them about this story of a old man who was dying, talking to a young man about what's really important in life when you really know you're going to die. And to a person, they basically said, not interested.
Right.
Boring. You're a sports writer. You can't write it. It's depressing. Nobody's going to want to read it. And I would have given up, Claire, honestly, if it were for me. If you get that many no's, you sort of take it as a hint.
Yeah.
But, because it was for someone else. And I learned a great lesson just in that. You know, when you're motivated to do something for somebody else, it's a different kind of motivation. And I said, I can't give up. I have to help him. We found one publisher 3 weeks before Maury died, who agreed to give us just enough money to pay off Maury's medical bills. And I told him, and we found this publisher. He didn't even know I was looking. And I said, all these conversations we've been having, we got a publisher wants to turn them into a book. He said, really, who? I said, Doubleday. He said, ooh, I heard of them. I said, yeah, well, not only that, but they're going to give us money for you to pay your medical bills. They want you to take all the money, and you don't have to worry about dying a second death. And so for me, that was kind of the end of Tuesdays with Maury. I'd finally learned to do one nice thing for someone who had done so many nice things for me. But little did I know that, I was going to become his eternal graduate student and my life was going to change forever.
Yeah, and 30 years later, still promoting his views, still bringing the story to life, because every time it takes to the stage, I would imagine, it breathes new life into his wisdom.
Yeah, and I think people get to experience in the theater version of it the closest version of what it was really like, because you're just sitting there, you're in seats, but you're in the same room as Maury. And that's what it was like for me. I was in a seat, I was in a chair across from him, listening to him. And so I love the play because it is kind of the purest form of what took place. And you're right, every night it's sort of that class begins again and ends again.
Mm-hmm. And you co-wrote the play, didn't you? You were involved in the adaptation of it.
Yeah, it was my first play. I've written a few since. I got a lot of lessons from my co-writer, Jeffrey Hatcher, who's quite an accomplished playwright. But I wanted to make sure that it truly reflected what took place and wasn't somebody's theatrical idea of what happened. And because I was able to co-write it, I think I was able to keep it true to what really happened. And God bless Jeffrey, he saw the drama and the theatricality of it in the truth and didn't really have to you know, fictionalize a whole lot. And you know, there's a few lines in there that are a little cuter than Maury actually said them. But other than that, it's pretty much like it happened.
Pretty much on the money. Am I right in saying that Maury's idea of our biggest failing as humans, or our biggest defect, if you like, was our short-sightedness? Is that something that he spoke to you a lot about?
You know, honestly, Claire, I think by the end, Maury felt that there were a lot of defects. And short-sightedness was certainly one, because short-sightedness covers a lot. It means that you're not really thinking about your whole life. Means you're not really thinking about the fact that you can die. It means you're not maybe thinking about other people, only about yourself. There's a lot that fits under short-sightedness. But I think he also felt that people lack compassion, and that I always remember one visit. We never watched television. You know, he had a TV in his office, but it was never on. And this one time I was there, he had it on, and I came in and he was crying. And I said, what are you crying about? And he said, this is so sad. And I looked at the TV, and it was some war footage from something that was going on at the time, I think in Bosnia. And I said, well, yeah, it is sad, but I mean, why are you crying? Have you ever been there? He said, no. I said, do you know anybody who's Bosnian? No. I said, then why are you crying? He said, well, Mitch, when you realize you're dying, you feel such empathy to anyone else who's suffering in the world. And you realize that we're all more alike than different. Mm-hmm. And I think that he felt that that's where people really were short-sighted, and that lack of compassion and empathy for others that kicks in when you suddenly realize your clock is ticking down very quickly. And then all of a sudden, everyone else who's suffering, you empathize with them. And before, they were the other, and now they're you. And I think that he felt that we lack that, as well as the things that you mentioned.
Well, Mitch, you know, that brings me to my next question for you, because I know that you have written for the Detroit Free Press about life as a Jewish person in America right now. This was in light of that awful Temple Israel attack in West Bloomfield. Where I suppose, and we see this in the Middle East too, with what's been happening in Iran and in South Lebanon and in Israel. I mean, lack of compassion is something that we can talk about for a long time in this conversation today. But from your perspective, being a Jewish person in America, you say, is a very difficult thing right now.
It is. That synagogue that you mentioned is about 3 miles from where I'm sitting right now. And I've been there many times. I've spoken there. I've taken my little girl to services there. I know most of the people there. And they're still in shock for that someone would drive a truck through their entrance with a gun, with a truck full of explosives, you know, sort of fireworks explosives. And it's ended up setting the whole building on fire and getting in a shootout with security guards while kids were going to school. It's horrific. It doesn't even make sense that those two things would go together. And, you know, unfortunately, synagogues now are all ringed with security guards. And it's sort of ironic for me, because I operate an orphanage in Haiti. And I go there every month for the last 16 years, ever since the earthquake. And we are facing the same thing at an orphanage because of the gang situation in Haiti. The gang violence is so bad that we have to have 24 security guards at our orphanage. And so I've seen this before, this weird dichotomy of, wait a minute, this is a place for children, and it's ringed with security guards. Wait, this is a place for prayer and children, and it's ringed with armed police officers. So yes, it's very frightening right now to, if you are Jewish in America, to go anywhere that identifies you as such, because you don't know if it's going to become a target.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it does feel as though in 2026 we have less understanding, less compassion and less patience with those who we perceive to be different to us.
I think Maury would be very, very disappointed in the world today. Almost everything that we are tending towards was the opposite of him. We are quick to anger. He wasn't. We are quick to judgment. He wasn't. We are quick to show no compassion to the other side and to see everybody as an other. He wasn't. He saw everybody as a potential friend. I'm frequently reminded of the sort of, Maury called something the tension of opposites, but he meant it in a good way. Like, you know, you're pulled in one way, you're pulled in the other way, and that kind of keeps your conscience straight. We just have opposites now. Mm-hmm. And it's disconcerting. But, you know, he was also a hopeful person, and I am too. You know, I just believe in the innate good of people. I always have. And, you know, my life has been a series of traveling around the globe, meeting people who aren't like me, don't speak my language, don't look like me, aren't the same religion, whatever, and finding common ground. I mean, we're talking, you know, you're in Ireland, I'm in America. We're not vastly different, but we're certainly from different backgrounds and we're talking. Mm-hmm. And as long as you find a way to have something to talk about, a lot of that other stuff melts away. But, you know, because we've become a society of, we get to know everything through our screens and our phones, which I think Maury would throw up from. I mean, thank God he passed away before screen culture dominated, because that just would have been the worst. And Maury teaching in a class where he had to walk in and people were on their phones, that just never would have worked. You know, he was an eye contact person and a physical contact person and voice to voice person. And I miss that desperately, you know, and I miss those. And I think sometimes about those times when I went to visit Maury, how there was, we didn't have cell phones, you know, it was the mid 90s. And, you know, you had to be rich to have a cell phone. You know, they were just coming out. And so there was no disruption like that. You know, nobody, I remember my wife called Maury's house once, there was something going on. And, you know, Maury's wife answered the phone in the kitchen and said, "Oh, Mitch, you know, your wife is calling." And it was a big thing. You know, my wife was calling the house on the kitchen phone, you know. And now, of course, you know, you're getting texts in the middle of any conversation you have. You might be getting 10 texts while you and I are talking right now, for all
well,
I know.
Well, I'm pleased to tell you, I do not have my phone in front of me, and I'm glad about that, given your views on the subject. But all of that tells us that it's probably timely for people, if they can, to go and have a look at Tuesdays with Maury on the stage, and to remind people, in the Gaiety Theatre from the 7th to the 18th of April, but also at the Everyman in Cork in March from the 26th to the 28th, the Watergate on the 30th of March, the Lime Tree Theatre on the 1st of April, and the National Opera House in Wexford on the 4th of April. Mitch, such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you, Claire. It's been my pleasure.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.